Michael, I'm an addict. To welcome you on this fifth annual Unity Retreat. We would like you to join us in celebrating the recovering fellowship that we have come to know, need, and deserve in our lives. We encourage you to share in our NA Unity through your experience, strength, and hope in our wide variety of workshops. This is an open retreat. All welcome to attend. However, we ask that any addict share in a workshop. In accordance with our seventh tradition, we are fully self-supporting. Thank you for registering. We should remember that our actions this weekend are direct reflections of Narcotics Anonymous as a whole, as carried the NA message, not the mess. What is the NA message? Our message is that any addict, can stop using drugs and lose the desire to use and find a new way to live. Our message is hope and the promise of freedom. When all is said and done, our primary purpose can only be to carry the message to the addict who still suffers, because that is all we have to give. That no addict anywhere need die from the horrors of addiction. The NA way. In Narcotics Anonymous, we are presented with a dilemma. When NA members identify themselves as addicts and alcoholics, cross addicts, who talk about living clean and sober, the clarity of the NA message is blurred. To speak of this matter suggests that there are two diseases, the one drug is separate from the rest. Narcotics Anonymous makes no distinction between drugs. Our identification as addicts is all-inclusive, allowing us to concentrate on our similarities, not our differences. To the press, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. If any members of the press are present, please come to the registration table where you'll be referred to our public information chairperson. We respectfully ask that no pictures be taken during the Unity Retreat by the press. If any NA members are approached by the press, please refer them to the registration table. Remember, no person represents NA. Please do not attempt to represent NA to the press alone. Thank you. Hi, everybody. I'm an addict, and my name is Michael. I'd like to welcome you to this workshop entitled Self-Acceptance. Would you please help me open with a moment of silence for the addict who still suffers, followed by the surrender prayer. God, grant us serenity to accept things we cannot change, courage to change things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Would you like to read We Do Recover?
Are we there now? No.
Sure.
Yeah? Good morning, everybody. I'm Michelle, and I'm a grateful recovering addict. When at the end of the road, we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs. We all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative. Either go on to the best we can to the bitter end, jails, institutions, or death, or catch a breath and find a new way of life, to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in history, a simple way has been proving itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple, spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Thank you, Joe. Michelle
walks us back up the hill. They should stay this side.
And now I'd like to introduce our first speaker, who is Steve from the Altoona area of Narcotics Anonymous.
Good morning, everybody. I'm an addict, and my name is Steve.
Hey, Steve.
First and foremost, I'd like to thank God for this opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope here. I want to thank the Unity Retreat Committee for seeing something in me to ask me to share when at times I don't see this much in myself. Self-acceptance is it's a good subject for me to share on right now. I'm going through some changes in my life that I just totally need to get some acceptance of. Share a little bit about myself. I'm the only child. I'm used to having everything that I want when I want it. And right now, that just isn't happening. All my life, I've been totally whatever you wanted me to be. So accepting myself is like all new to me. These are waters that I've never treaded before. And coming through the process of this recovery, I realized that to accept myself is to accept the person on the inside. I used to always dress up the outside. If you had new sneaks, I had new sneaks. If you had a new jacket, I had a new jacket. I was always what you wanted me to be. I was a chameleon for like 35, 36 years of my life. Who I am, like I said, it's all new to me. I remember telling my first lie when I was in first grade. And from then on, I was just whatever you wanted me to be. I told everybody in my family that I drew a picture of Dr. Seuss at one time. And all of a sudden, art supplies started coming in. And I had to learn how to draw. So ever since then, I learned how to be everything except for me, except for Steven. I'm learning who I am on a slow process. I'm learning that I am a kind, gentle, loving person. I do cry when coming up throughout my younger years. That was just totally wrong for me to cry. I had to be this tough, hardcore guy that I really didn't even know nothing about being. You know, I did what you did, even if I didn't like doing it. I got into using drugs and alcohol simply so that I could fit in. You know, I did things that I didn't like. You know, I had my first drink when I was under 10. I was with my dad on a camping trip up in Canada, and I got drunk, and I remember to this day that I didn't like it. I cried, I whined, I wanted to go home to my mother. I wanted to be protected. So, thinking back then is, you know, this addiction must be hereditary because I didn't like it, but yet and still, at the age of 13, I flipped the script and I just started indulging more in drinking and doing drugs. And the more I did, the more I covered up who I was, who I really was. I've been to rehab, but as far as I'm concerned, I don't think I need to be rehabilitated. I think I needed to be habilitated because I never knew who I really was. For me, rehabilitation is I think, I don't know, renewing the person who you was or retracking yourself so that you can get back to where you was instead of where you're at now, which where my life was just totally unmanageable. It was really crazy. It was real chaos. I had a child at the age of 19. My first daughter was born. And I wanted to have kids because all the boys was having kids. That's what I thought made me a man because, hey, these guys, man, they got kids. They're having sex. I got to have a child just so these guys know that I'm having sex, even though I used to come to the table lying and said, oh, I sued so-and-so, and it was just a complete lie. I'm a real timid man, whereas I can put on this mask that I'm real tough. You know, even today, I can blend in. I can go through a neighborhood and feel like I'm part of, but where deep inside, I'm really afraid. I need to get real with that because that's the person that I am. Today, I'm learning to stand up for something because I used to always just fall for anything. Today I do try to have some morals in my life. Today I realize that I made some mistakes and it's hard for me to accept these things, but that's just life on life terms for me. I have a total of 7 children. I used to feel that shouldn't have happened to me. Sometimes I feel real hateful towards that, even today, you know. Why I have to have so many kids? Why I gotta have these responsibilities? You know, I look at some guys that are like in the room. Some of my friends today, they're single, they don't have no kids. And there I am wishing that I were in their shoes, when all along, right now, I do believe that I am truly blessed, because believe it or not, I'm 40 years old. I am a grandfather of two. And I have people look at me and say, you don't even look like you're old enough to have two children. And that's a blessing. I do love my children. I don't know how to love them, but I'm learning that on a daily basis. Every time I get up, I'm going to say through this program, my higher power, who I choose as God, molded me, shaped me, and prepared me to have my three young daughters in my life today. Whereas, like I said, I have a total of seven children, but I have no experience in being responsible whatsoever. I believe the first time I bought my oldest daughter, who is 21 now, anything, I think she was like the age of seven. You know, her mother did all the footwork. She did all the responsibilities. I did all the running. I went to go buy Pampers. I went to go buy shoes. I went to doctor's appointments, but I never paid the way. I never flipped the bill. Somebody else was always flipping the bill, but I always took the credit. And that's how I lived. I'm learning to say that, like I said, I do cry. I watched the morning show. I think it was Regis and Kelly, and I was watching the program on a woman raising her children and how she was struggling and suffering. Her and her husband had to sleep in the child's bedroom just to flip her at night in her sleep, just to scratch her, just to wipe her runny nose, because she had a muscle dysfunction. And I actually cried, you know, and that kind of surprised me, because, you know, I don't know, I took a lot of things for granted. I didn't appreciate what I had, and now I sort of do. I can accept the fact that it is my turn to raise these children, that and that someday that God will prepare me and He will mend them bridges for me to take responsibility with my older children. They don't even call me dad because they want to. They call me dad because they think that they have to. And I accept that. I did that. I damaged their life like that. I always wanted to be a friend and a buddy, and even a couple of years ago, my daughter, she stood up to me and said, "Why don't you get out of my girlfriend's face? You're too old for my friends," you know? And, like, I took that like, you know, you don't know what you're talking about. If it wasn't for me getting to these young girl faces, you wouldn't be here. But I got to accept the fact that I am grown, you know what I mean? I still got these character defects. I still want to be young. You know, like my hat, cocked to the side. Now, that's just me. You know what I mean? I was telling somebody this morning, I need to be wearing Dockers, some Octagon socks, and some pullover shirts with eagles on the chest. You know what I mean? Smoking a pipe. But you know what? But that's not me either. That's just me dressing up to what I think that I should be. This is me. This is me. I'm totally scared. I'm getting ready to shit in my pants. And, you know, but this is me, though. You know, I did everything to have you accept me, and I wasn't accepting myself. Today my life is still crazy, even working through this program. But that's because of things that I still do today, things that I just don't know how to do. I always thought that I knew that I could raise my kids better now, that I could do a better job than my wife, that, you know, nobody needs to tell me what to do. But, you know, I don't know what to do. You know, I don't know what to do when my daughter says, I'm afraid of the dark. Can you come sit with me? I don't know how to sit still with that. You know, I'm learning. And it's hard to swallow that pill by me saying that I don't know, because I always thought I knew. And the things that I knew is what got me in trouble. You know, it got me homeless, got me hungry, got me with a habit, got me put in institutions. You know, that you know, today being here at this Unity retreat, it's not only helping me with just the topic self-acceptance. It's giving me a lot of gratitude today for the things that I have. You know, like I said, I'm 40 years old. I got the memory of a 60-year-old man. I busted up my pelvis. Some nerves is damaged. So needless to say that I'm kind of damaged in that area too. But I got a 13-day-old son. So, you know, I can accept the things that I can function, but I'm just not functioning like I was when I was 19. But then again, see, I'm not 19 either, you know. So I can accept that now, you know. There's a lot of things that I don't remember, and I thank God that the girl that's in my life now, she's also in the program. She's helping me out a whole lot. It's a lot of things that I didn't want to accept when I first come around either. As I said, I always wanted to feel young. I always wanted to have things my way. I don't know if this is midlife crisis or not, but my girlfriend is 23 and I'm 40, like I said. God knows how long that's going to last, but I am preparing myself for the worst if that comes, you know. But we go through this on a daily basis. We have our ups and our downs, and we have our crazy moments. But at night, we can lay down and we can be human, you know. I don't know. I always wish that I would have did this or I would have done that. But if wishes was horses, then beggars would ride, you know. I did what I did, and I got what I got. I need to just stand up to the plate and either go to bat or just sit down and strike out like I always done. And today I choose to try to at least hit and get to first base, you know. I don't know. I still have a problem with my outer appearance. I have a problem with perfection right now. It's eating me up alive that the situation that I was in, that I couldn't get a change of clothes. I feel real crummy and dirty, but that's okay because, see, I'm getting this hour clean, you know. I'm coming to grips that I would never walk on water, and I never want the responsibility that my higher power had when he walked this earth. But I always wanted to be just as great as he was, and today I know I'm far from that. It's a lot of things that I can't do. I don't have coordination to do a lot of things like put puzzles together with my children. My daughter is 7 years old. She does word search. She does crossword puzzles. She put a 300-piece puzzle together almost by herself, you know, and that was without my help because I just couldn't do it. And it's hard for me to tell a 7-year-old that I don't know how. And I really don't. This subject is real touchy for me. So if I show emotions, it's because I'm hurting. I was scared to death to come up here and to share. I didn't know what I was going to share. I didn't know what to say. But I know to just come up here and just be honest. I know this is supposed to help somebody else, but right now it's like just helping me. And that's okay too. For me, like I said, I've never felt part of. I've always been what she wanted me to be, and today this is me. I'm scared. I'm alone. I always alienate myself. Even here, I'm by myself. Even though I'm among people that are just like me. I don't know. I don't know you or you, but we all have something in common. We're all just trying to get another day clean. We're trying to change our life. But, you know, I feel like I need to do what you want me to do. And I don't know how. So, you know, I ask God to speak through me, to use me as his mouthpiece, to use me as a vessel. And when he was through, to have me sit down and shut up, because if I keep talking after he used me, then it'll just be my shit. Then I'll just be throwing game into the fire. So with that, I'm just going to sit down. I want to thank you for listening to me. And again, thanks to Unity Retreat chairperson for asking me to speak. That's all I got.
And now I would like to introduce the second speaker, if she's caught her breath yet. This is Michelle.
From Altoona.
Is that thing on?
Yep.
I ain't digging that. Good morning again, everybody. I'm Michelle, and I'm a grateful recovering addict.
Hi, Michelle.
Like Steve, this was thrust upon me. I haven't even registered yet, so.
Oh.
Which is probably for the best, because I didn't have time to think about it, but I believe there are no coincidences, because the subject is self-acceptance. I mean, the key to my recovery this time that makes it a real recovery, because I don't think I ever had recovery before, is my self-acceptance. When I tried to get clean before, I'd always come in, go to meetings, leave, or just smile and laugh and be whatever you wanted me to be, and be it for my mom, be it for my dad, be it for my husband, be it for whoever, but I was just putting on a game. And I'm like Steve, from the door, I was always who you wanted me to be, you know, especially for men. I had a habit of being like Steve, a chameleon. Like, if this guy wanted me to be this way, I'd be that way. Tell me to do this, I'll do it. Okay? My line I use now is like, if he thought I was okay, then I was okay. And that is a horrible, horrible way to live. And I lived that way for a long time. About 30 years I lived that way. And I really... Once you have self-acceptance, you'll never settle for less. And I found that out. My life today is so much better, since I don't have to be who everybody else wants me to be. I can just sit back and be me. And let me backtrack a little bit and tell you a little bit about myself. I had as normal a childhood as possible. My parents loved me. I wasn't abused or anything. They treated me real good. You know, there was some dysfunction going on. They were divorced and stuff, but I was never treated badly. I think my alcoholism and addiction is hereditary also. It runs through the women in my family like crazy, and I have two girls, but self-acceptance is going to have to come in with that. But so I didn't have a bad life, but from the door, I was a blackout drunk, you know, and it led into, I did a lot of things that made me not even want to know myself. I lost my oldest daughter when she was 7. I didn't lose her. I gave her up to my husband because it was, you know, I had to go into rehab, and it was for the best, you know, for the best. But from there, I became a heroin addict because I wanted to fit in with a man. I met a guy in rehab, and we were friends. We were just friends, and we all hung out. We all went to meetings together, but then he relapsed, and I thought I could fix this person. The ultimate lie. So I hunted this person down. I tried to help him, took him to detox him numerous amount of times. But then my disease told me, your family's not around. You ain't got a husband no more. You got this guy who's using. He ain't going to care if you're using. So go ahead and use. You know, and maybe I won't be so bitchy if I'm using and he's using. And I began drinking again. And as a good drunk, I knew how I drank, and I knew my limitations, and I knew I was a bitch when I got drunk. So I said, well, let me try this heroin thing. He looks pretty mellow. You know, he don't look bitchy. And I wanted to be like him. I wanted to, you know, he looked real happy, nodding on the couch. And needless to say, I never nodded. I was not a nodder, which pissed me off even more. But so I started using heroin. And then there was a quick, real quick fall. I got to the bottom of that barrel pretty quick. I was homeless. I would disappear for months on end. You know, and like in wintertime, I'd come in and to my mom's and get clean and stuff, because it was too damn cold to be living in an abandoned building. But needless to say, I did a lot of things in active addiction that really made me hate myself even more than I had already hated myself. I was real slimy. I felt real dirty. I get real honest when I'm sharing. If you judge me, that's your problem, not mine. I prostituted. I didn't talk to my daughter for a long time. I stole from my mother. I was filthy. I ate out of trash cans, and I had contracted STD. And trying to get clean and not dealing with this, I moved up to Altoona. And I had all this guilt and this shame, and like, who's going to want me? So I couldn't figure out why my parents still talked to me. I couldn't figure out why any of my family members, knowing all the things I did, still talked to me. And I just couldn't figure it out. And living in Altoona, I couldn't shoot dope because I'm too cheap. For real. So I started drinking again, and I've been dope sick and I've had BPs, and I'm not sure which is worse. I began to drink so much that I had to drink. It was now physical, and even if I wanted to quit, my body wouldn't let me. I'd have to get up in the morning and go right to the bar as soon as my husband left work. Who was clean? Who was that man I tried to save? He came up to the rehab, and I was still trying to please him. You know, I was like, okay, as long as he thinks I'm okay, I'm okay. You know, as long as he still loves me, that means I'm worth loving. Which now to me today is ridiculous, but then it was real. It was real for me. I needed somebody else to tell me I was okay, or I probably would have blew my head off if I had enough balls, but I don't. So I just went on this spiral, and I didn't realize until recently, right before I went into rehab this last time, I got court papers handing my 13-year-old over to my in-laws because my ex-husband couldn't take care of her any longer. And then I think I really started to feel like shit because, damn, you know what? Now neither of us want her taking care of her. I need to step up to the plate. So for about a month, I was in this poor me, I'm a piece of shit, slimy hoe, whatever mode. And I'll never forget it. I forget many moments of that time because I was in blackout. But I'll never forget the self-hatred I had for myself, and I can't believe it today that I actually didn't kill myself. The last day I was, which I remember bits and pieces, that I was in active addiction, I remember feeling like such shit, but telling myself, okay, I know I can do this, because I had been clean before. So I had hope. I had this little inkling of hope inside me somewhere that it could be done. And my husband... He wasn't my husband then. My husband now tells me he threw me out of the house. But all I remember is I came up with this plan because I had spent so much of the county's money, the government's money, and insurance company's money on rehabs that I didn't think anybody was going to pay for me. I wasn't worth paying for anyway. So I came up with this plan that if I made it look like I was suicidal, they'd have to, like, 5F me, and they'd have to detox me because I was a threat to myself or some crap. And I remember drinking in the bar. I remember I had to go back to the bar to get more drunk to, like, go out with this, go through with this plan, and I remember just laying down on my bed and sticking a knife in my chest and hoping for the best. And I woke up in the emergency room at Chrysler. I was told I was flipping out and calling nurses' names, which I don't remember, but I believe. I don't have any trouble believing that part whatsoever, because that's the way I am when I drink. But a sense of relief came over me when they told me I was going to the Cove. I was like, okay, I'll be safe there, and I don't have to drink. And I got into the Cove, and I still had all these issues, and I still hated myself, and I still couldn't believe anybody wanted to be in my life. I didn't want to be in my life. I didn't even want to exist, but like I said, I didn't have enough balls to end it. You know, I just didn't. So when I went up there, I was in this small group, and I share this at my home group a lot, and I still talk to this girl, and she's so clean. She was in my small group. And I had trouble. I wasn't telling anybody the things I did, because if you knew what I did, you just would not want to be my friend. I was the only one in the world who ever did this, of course, because I'm unique. But me and her would be sharing in small group, and she'd beat around the bush, and I'd beat around the bush. And finally, I pulled her aside. I'm like, did you do this and this and this and this? She's like, yeah, wait till I tell you. And we started talking about all these horrible things we had done, and we could laugh about it. And I really liked this girl, and she was a really sweet girl. And I started somehow to believe that maybe I'm a sweet girl, too. I just did really bad things. And I wish to this day, I remember who told me this, but somebody said, God forgives you, forgive yourself. And I don't know why, for me, it was like a spiritual awakening, and I can't explain it. But that just hit me like, okay, maybe I'll run with that one, you know, because I began to believe that it was there was evidence around me that other people didn't care what I had done. They just cared that I would get better. And people kept telling me that, like, come on, we just want, my mother used to say, I just want Michelle back. And that just used to kill me. You should tear me up, be like, are you trying to say I'm not me? You know, and I just remember hearing those words, and it was just like a new beginning for me. It was like, okay. And I was told, judge, and I tell this to people all the time, just judge yourself on what you do today, and you don't have to worry about where you were, because that's not who you are. Who you are is today. And when I do a daily inventory, I don't go back in the past. I don't sit in, sometimes, I can't even lie, something will pop into my head about an incident that happened when I was out there, and it'll be like, whoa. But then I have to remember, okay, today I cared for kids, I went to a meeting, I went to work, and I'm a productive person today. My husband always says, and that's the man that I chased down and tried to get in detox, but we went through a lot. We had to separate for 6 months, and I wouldn't recommend it to anyone. It paid off for me, but I think I beat the odds on that one. He always says that, you know, my wife's got it going on. She don't settle for nothing. But on a lot of given days, he don't like that. He don't like that I don't settle today sometimes. My favorite line now to him is, that's unacceptable. You know, I don't allow people to talk to me any which way but loose today. I'm worth more than that. Back in the day, I thought you could just tell me I'm a hoe, bitch. Like, hey, I am. Okay, whatever. Today, don't talk to me twisted because I deserve better than that. And it was a long road getting there. But my life is tenfold. I don't settle for less than the best or the best that I can do. In the past 3 years, I've been clean almost 3 years. I've done a lot of footwork. My daughter, I just signed papers about a month ago that I lost when she was 7. Be careful what you pray for because now she lives with me. She'll be 14. And I have to come to some acceptance that I screwed her up just a tad bit. She's a good girl, thank God. She doesn't get any trouble, but she has an attitude and she has some anger issues. And guess what? I'm part of that. I caused some of that. And I let her know. I know that there's a lot of this is my fault. And you're okay. It's okay to be angry at me for not being there. But it's hard. I had her with me in the summers and stuff, but it's different. I need to accept I did a little damage on a poor girl. And some days it's okay and some days it's not. But we just work through it together. I'm blessed. She's not into drugs. She goes to meetings. She sees what drugs do people. And I just hope that all this knowledge stays with her long enough to keep her out of the fire. But self-acceptance for me, it couldn't have been a better topic. That's the only reason I'm clean today. I need to say, because if I continue to live in the past, which I did for many years after I got out of Philadelphia, I didn't get clean for another year. And I continue to just be that person that was back in Philadelphia, stealing, tricking, and doing all those things. And until I could realize that I was powerless over everything that ever happened until I do that. Now, I'm not powerless over that because I can do that. But I'm powerless over what I just said. I'm powerless over what I've done. I can't change it. I can change who I am today. And I like who I am today. Sometimes I'm not spiritual, but I have an awareness. This program's given me an awareness of my strengths and my weaknesses and what I need to work on. I was telling my daughter the other day, she says, I have an anger management problem. I said, guess what? You know what the problem now is. So the excuse is out the door. What are you going to do about it? So having the, she don't like that. Not at all. She's like, whoop. this program teaches me like not sweat out on people. Just have such a serene, calm life. I used to have to wear like clothes, like Steve said. I had to be the hottest, cutest little thing on the block because inside I was just a slimy piece of crap. And today my husband makes fun of me because I'll go around in jogging pants and a t-shirt and he'll be like, damn, you look like a psycho. I said, but I feel good, you know, and I can accept who I am today. Some things, like, you know, I wish my butt was smaller and, you know, so a little cosmetic things, but I've become a really wonderful person in Narcotics Anonymous. It's made me be me instead of being who you want me to be. And I wouldn't trade this gift for the world. Narcotics Anonymous only promises you freedom from active addiction, but the freedom from self-hatred is it's a blessing, and I could not continue to live on a daily basis if I didn't have it. I get really, really passionate when I talk about it with people because I see so many people that just can't forgive themselves, and it's like, for me, it's easy to say, hey, just let it go, it's in the past, la, 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 but I have to remember that deep pain I had, and that deep hatred I had for myself, and I try to put myself back in that position when I'm talking to people about it, and I never want to feel that way again. I think if I had to go back to that, I would probably get the balls to blow my hat off. It was bad enough being an active addict, but not being able to look in the mirror was even worse. You know, I used to look in the mirror long enough to comb my hair, and sometimes I didn't even do that because I don't have to. I had myself so trained well that I didn't need mirrors. They didn't have mirrors in abandoned buildings. But I don't know. I just can't. Anyone who's struggling with self-acceptance, I just pray for them because for me it was the hardest hurdle to get over to get the freedom that I have today and the blessings I get with it, you know. I've been in relationships with men where I let them beat me every which way but loose. Why? Because I deserved it. I'm an asshole. You know, I'm an asshole. I'd hit me too. But, you know, and that's unacceptable. That is so unacceptable to me today. You know, sure, I can be an asshole all I want, but I don't deserve to be hit. I don't deserve to be talked to any which way but loose. And I won't talk to anybody that way unless they get me to that point. But I try to be more spiritual than that today. I try to say, that's unacceptable. And you'll find that'll piss off a man quicker than anything. Than calling them names. Just say, you know what, I find that unacceptable, and I think that's your shit. And walk away. The beauty of it, it's beautiful. It'll piss a man off quicker than saying, fuck you, you bastard. It really will. But, and I find growth in that, though, because I used to just be like, let my tongue say whatever I was thinking, and that's not a good thing, you know. I found that I need to think about things before I say them, because if I said everything I was thinking, I probably wouldn't have a whole lot of friends, or associates anyway, or clients that liked me. I work in the drug and alcohol field, and I see so much unself-acceptance on a daily basis. It's just, I want to shake them and tell them, guess what? But my key message about self-acceptance is when you evaluate self, do it on your merits for today. The key for me was stay out of the past, stay out of active addiction when you're trying to figure out who you are because that was just a monster inside you. Active addiction tells you to do what you got to do to get what you got to get regardless of morals, regardless of anything you ever learned in your life. Active addiction will tell you to do the opposite. And when you're yourself, don't look at that stuff because 9 times out of 10, an addict wouldn't do the same thing when they're clean. I know I can't go down into Kensington and act like I feel okay today because if I get near Kensington, I get physically sick. I don't even think I could play it off anymore. I would be scared shitless to go down there. And back in the day, I used to walk around there like it was nothing. Like I was this big, bad, tough, 5'2", 85-pound girl that could kick ass. And I would try. I would be scared shitless today to even go anywhere near where I use. Not because of drugs being around, because it's dangerous. It's just dangerous down there. And I think I was so twisted I didn't see it. And I can accept the fact I got no business being in Philadelphia. One of the hard things I had to do for my recovery, and I had to accept it, was my daughter, who still lived in Philly at the time, was having a birthday party. And I only had like 2 months clean or something. And there was no way in hell I was going to Philly unescorted. And I didn't for the first year. And for once in my life, I chose my recovery over other people. I said, look, I'm sorry. I cannot go. It's not safe for me. It broke my heart. But I had to accept the fact I might use if I go down to Philly. And the way my God works, Somehow, some way, the plans got changed. After I made that decision not to go, made the phone call, said, I'm sorry, I can't go. They switched the party. An escort could take me, and I got to go. But I had to have the willingness to make that choice. And I think the only reason that was changed is because I made the choice to do the right thing and accept the fact that my recovery comes first, even over my children. And it was one of the hardest things I ever had to do, but I got such a reward out of it. Because I realized that if I make the right choices, my God will do the right things for me, you know. Recovery has been a blessing for me, all I can say. And the key for my recovery is acceptance of the past, self-acceptance of me, and the realization that I'm powerless over every stinking thing but my attitudes and my actions. And most times I remember that. And when I do, I don't sweat the small stuff. I don't worry about what other people think about me. You know, when I share my story and like in my home group and stuff, I lay it all on the table. I don't care what you think about me. Because the only reason I'm here today is because somebody else laid it out for me and said, look what I did. And if he wouldn't have done that, I might not be here. I have to be able to accept that's part of what I've done. I've done it. It's dead. I wouldn't do it today. I'd be too afraid to do it. I'd be afraid I'd get arrested or something. But part of that, I don't live in the past, but I accept it. I accept that I did a lot of bad things in my act of addiction, but I also accept that that's not me, and that's not how I have to judge my everyday life on that, and I don't have to live like that. My best recommendation is when you do an inventory, start in the morning and end at night. Don't put any past crap in there, and you'll find that we're not bad people. We just have a really bad disease that may do really bad things in act addiction. And without self-acceptance, like I said, I would not be standing here right now. And that's all I got.
Thank you.